Welcome to Torah Rimecha Nach Yomi. My name is Adina Schmidman, and we are excited to begin Divrei Hayamim, the concluding Sfarim, in this remarkable two-year journey. As we finish this cycle of Torah Rimecha Nach Yomi and prepare for the next cycle, your learning experience and takeaways are valuable. Please go to ou.org/women/nachsurvey, NACHSURVEY, to share your thoughts and insights. For Torah Rimecha January 22 Siyum updates, please sign up at ou.org/women/Siyum. Mazel Tov, and now let's continue with Divrei Hayamim Aleph with Mrs. Stacy Goldman.
Hello, my name is Stacy Nechama Goldman. Welcome to Torah Rimecha Nach Yomi with the OU's Women's Initiative. My name is Stacy Nechama Goldman, and today we will be studying Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Aleph, Chapter 1. As we begin to delve into the first section of the last book of the Tanakh, we should note that we are entering into an elite group of people who have studied this book in depth. Even 500 years ago, the esteemed biblical commentator Abarbanel laments in his introduction to the book of Shmuel that he only studied Divrei Hayamim for the first time in order to write his commentary on Shmuel. In his own words, Et chat'i ani maskir hayom ki lo karati bo mimai, ולא חפשתי בעניינב, מהיותי ועדתה. I mention my sin today, that I have not read all my days, nor searched in its subject matter from my birth until now. We will see why Abarbanel found it useful to study Divrei Hayamim while writing a commentary on Sefer Shmuel when we arrive at the stories of David HaMelech. I purposefully said book in the singular, as Divrei Hayamim, along with Shmuel and Malachim, were originally each one complete book until the Christians, possibly the Archbishop of Canterbury from the 13th century, divided them into two sections and the entire Tanakh into chapters, or parakim. Divrei Hayamim opens with a seemingly straight genealogy that will take us through several chapters. While these verses may seem like nothing more than a list of names, we will dig deeper to see what we can learn. Our first question stems from the fact that some families in the genealogy are given short shrift, while others are expanded upon in great detail. The first four psukim take us from Adam to Noach, with only one name mentioned from each of those 10 generations, with the exception of the three sons of Noach, Adam, Shet, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, Yared, Chanoch, Metushalach, Lamech, Noach, Shem, Cham, Vayefet. Why is this so? And why will we see a similar pattern as we continue down the family tree? The commentary attributed to Rashi explains the purpose of this book is to relate the lineage of David to the very first man, Adam. He cites a midrash from Bereishit Rabbah, which compares it to a man traveling from place to place who drops a pearl. He sifted the sand until he found the pearl. So too must we sift through all the descendants of various people before we will get to Avraham. The reason I described the author of this explanation as attributed to Rashi is because most people do not think Rashi actually wrote this commentary on Divrei Hayamim. One clue that he was not the author might be the fact that the author quotes Rashi as Rabbeinu Shlomo Zal, short for Zichrono Livracha, or may his memory be a blessing, what we say after someone has passed away. A few times that's mentioned throughout the book. For the sake of brevity, we will refer to this commentary as Rashi going forward. The Malbim explains that the book's purpose is to enumerate all the people from Adam in order to reach the children of Israel, the chosen people. He explains that people of other nations are also included, as they may have been the chosen ones of their nations. Some people, however, are simply placeholders. This explains why the first nine people mentioned are divided into three verses. Adam, Shet, and Enosh were important chosen people, each in his generation, while those mentioned in verse 2, Kenan, Mahalalel, Yared, were simply placeholders. The men of verse 3, Chanoch, Metushalach, Lamech, returns us to the righteous ones of their generation. After arriving at Noach and his three sons, Shem, Cham, and Yefet, in verse 4, the chapter then begins to list all of those descendants who became one of the 70 nations from whom all peoples are descended. One of the few exceptions to this straight genealogical list of names is when we are introduced to Nimrod in verse 10. V'chush yalad et Nimrod, hu hechel liot gibor ba'aretz. And Cush begot Nimrod, he began to be a mighty man on the earth. The exact same language is used for Nimrod in Bereshit chapter 10. There, Rashi understands the verb hechel, which we have translated as began, as something more sinister, based on the word chol, which is the opposite of kodesh, which means holy. He explains that he caused the entire world to rebel against Hashem. He is also the villain who threw Avram into the fiery furnace, as told in the famous Midrash, from which he miraculously escaped unscathed. Another exception is the son of Shem, Peleg. Rashi, in Bereshit chapter 10, explains that his father, Aver, was a prophet who predicted that at the end of Peleg's days, the people would be scattered after the incident of the Tower of Babel. Once this list is complete, the text then goes back to Shem and lists only the descendants that continue straight to Avraham. Rashi, in verse 24, compares this to the king sifting for his pearl as well. It is interesting to note that verse 28 lists the children of Avraham as Yitzchak and then Yishmael, even though Yishmael was the older brother. However, with regard to Yitzchak's sons in verse 34, they are in birth order, Esav and then Yisrael. Malbim reflects that this is the same order used when each set of brothers buried their father. For Avraham's burial, Yishmael had done tshuva and deferred to Yitzchak. The same could not be said for Esav with regard to Yisrael. After listing the descendants of Yishmael, the text continues with the children of Keturah, Avraham's pilegesh, or concubine, whom he took after Sarah died. Rashi tells us, in Bereshit, that this woman is actually Hagar, who had repented so that her deeds were sweet like the ketoret, the incense spices. As we read through Esav's genealogy, there is confusion around who exactly Timnah was. Different commentaries have different issues, including whether the first mention is a man and the second was a woman, and whether she may have been part of an incestuous relationship. You can learn more about this in Rashi and Rashbam on Bereshit chapter 36. In that chapter, we learn that Timnah, the female, was a concubine of Esav's firstborn son, Eliphaz, and that their son was Amalek. Timnah is also mentioned in verse 51 of our chapter as the name of a chieftain of Edom, the kingdom of Esav's descendants. She is also mentioned, verse 39, as the sister of Lotan, who is identified as one of the chieftains of the inhabitants of Seir. The Gemara in Sanhedrin 99b explains why this verse is included in Tanakh. It seems like an unnecessary detail. The rabbis explain that it is indeed significant, as it shows the unintended consequences of the actions of our forefathers. To quote from the Gemara, Timnah sought to convert. She came before Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and they did not accept her. She went and became a concubine of Eliphaz, son of Esav, and said, referring to herself, it is preferable that she will be a maidservant for this nation, and she will not be a noblewoman for another nation. Ultimately, Amalek, the son of Eliphaz, emerged from her, and that tribe afflicted the Jewish people. What is the reason that the Jewish people were punished by suffering at the hand of Amalek? It is due to the fact that they should not have rejected her when she sought to convert. It is amazing the lessons we learned from a seemingly insignificant verse. The last section of our chapter is a list of kings who, according to verse 43, Malchu be'eretz Edom lifnei mlach melech lifnei Yisrael, reigned over the land of Edom before any king reigned over the children of Israel. There is debate among the commentaries as to when these kings actually reigned. According to Rashi in Bereshit 36:31, these eight kings correspond to eight kings of Israel, beginning with Shaul, when the Edomites were no longer a sovereign nation with a king, rather a governor, and ended during the time of Joram, when the Edomites rebelled and reestablished a king over themselves. Chizkuni, however, relates this to the time when Moshe was king over Israel, well before King Shaul and David. Baal HaTorim relates the number 8 to the 8 times that Yaakov referred to Esav as my lord, Adoni, during their reconciliation. As a result, Edom had 8 kings before Israel had their own kings, beginning with Shaul, in agreement with Rashi. This ends the sifting of the sand, as Rashi explained earlier. We can begin to appreciate the world of our forefathers and how they needed to overcome the negative influences around them in order to emerge as the God-fearing progenitors of the Jewish people. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilui Nishmat Malka Esther Bat Tzvi Yosef.